The Packers may be in the NFC Championship game this weekend, but general manager Ted Thompson's attention is already on next year, scouting the East-West Shrine game. We'll find out what's happening this week in St. Petersburg from Paul Guillemette of the Great Blue North Draft Report here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central next. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caribou. Joined this morning by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden, along with Alex Talich. We're talking some Packers football. We're getting ready for the NFC Championship game this upcoming Sunday. Before we do that, we have joining us on the line...
Expert interview.
Paul Guillemette of the Great Blue North Draft Report, checking in from the site of the East-West Shrine game this week. Mr. Guillemette, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Mr. Caribou. How about you?
Very good. Glad you could join us today. Kind of a, it's a little bit tough while the Packers are still alive to talk about next year in the NFL draft, but we're going to attempt to maybe talk a little bit about both today. And I'll start with this. I think the Packers probably aren't in a position they are today, Paul, if it's not for Ted Thompson putting in the time like he is this week, doing some scouting. Can you kind of compare Thompson to his peers in the NFL and how much the Packers' success they can credit to Ted Thompson?
I think it's real simple, Brian. If you are one who equates success in the NFL with drafting and signing undrafted rookies every year, developing them, and keeping them on your roster if at all possible, then without a doubt, Ted Thompson is the man around the NFL. He's known around the league, of course, because of his long playing career as a special teamer, and then having been as a area scout for a while, and then his miscellaneous duties up until now. And I can tell you that he is still considered to be one of the guys when it comes to the scouting and personnel community. And people shake their head when you bring his name up or they see him at these venues. And they are just amazed that he's still able to be the grinder that he is. And I think it's a situation where it's basically, from what I have heard Ted himself say, which isn't much, and others around him, bottom line is the guy just has a knack for this and he has a passion for it. And you combine those two and it breeds success. Does he have, I'll say it quickly before people jump on this later, does he have his share of strikeouts and foul balls and misses? Sure he does. But he has a higher success rate than most. And I think as big a key as having that knack for spotting talent, I think some of it purely boils down to he refuses to get discouraged. He refuses to change that philosophy. It is ingrained in Ted Thompson that this is how you build your team. You find your own, you keep your own, you develop your own, and it serves him well. And you can see the stability in the Packers franchise. Let's just say, even going back where we include, the misstep with the Mike Sherman situation, which was a conglomerate of things, I think. But if you look at the success of the Green Bay Packers this last, let's say this millennium, since 2000, which pretty much gets you into the Ted Thompson era by 2005, they are as successful or more so than any team in the NFL. We sure would like to have a couple more Lombardi trophies back. But when you look at the record, and especially if you take out the seven games last year when Aaron Rodgers was unable to play and they didn't win very many games, if you take that little chunk out, they have the highest winning percentage over the last decade of any team in the NFL.
Yeah, it's crazy. What's also interesting about Ted Thompson, I heard last week he was at one of the few NFL general managers at the Medal of Honor All-Star Game, kind of the third-rate or fourth-rate bowl or All-Star Game. And for him to be there and many of his peers not is a testament to him. But tell me, Paul, I mean, you're on the ground in St. Petersburg. What's Ted been up to this week? Do you have any inside information or can you glean anything?
No, because it was a very brief appearance, as you can well imagine, with the Packers having a championship game this weekend. Ted was one of the first people I saw on Monday. Actually, it was Monday afternoon because they had a weigh-in Monday morning, and obviously Ted went to that first, but they jammed two practices into the afternoon on Monday, and one of the first executives that I saw and identified, despite his stealthy demeanor at these occasions, was Ted Thompson, and he was out there for both of the practices on Tuesday, and then Wednesday he kind of slipped away and came back to Green Bay in preparation for the playoff game.
Yeah,
I'm guessing he came back to Green Bay to do a little bit of cleanup and then went with the team out to Seattle. So it has been an abbreviated week, but I would be willing to bet that next Tuesday, not Monday, the Senior Bowl has changed their schedule slightly. I would be willing to bet that next Tuesday morning, as I sit in Mobile at the weigh-in, I expect to see Ted Thompson in a front row seat like he usually is with his scouting staff.
I bet he will. All right, Paul, I know you can't put a ton of stock into stuff like this that I'm going to ask you, but the word from WalterFootball.com, I don't know if you know the guys there or not.
Yeah, I know some of them, and it's a decent site.
I definitely agree with that. But they, you know, they just list briefly the players that were observed interviewing with teams, and you know, I think you know people hear this. Oh, the Packers were interviewing this player. Well, I mean, they interview almost every player. This was the report from Walter Football. They were interviewing two guys, and they were both running backs, Malcolm Brown of Texas and Dominique Brown of Louisville. And it may seem slightly odd, given the Packers seem to be in pretty good shape with Eddie Lacy and James Starks, but I guess you can't rule anything out in the later rounds. Tell me about these guys, these running backs there this week.
Okay, be glad to. And let me comment, not that you needed this, you get enough of this from everybody back in Wisconsin, but I could see that they might have some interest in a running back, because let's face it, given salary cap and a few other things, one has to question how long James Starks can be affordable.
Yep.
As long as he's running well, he's going to get some attention elsewhere any day now. So it's not inconceivable. And I would argue that for their style of offense, both of those guys that you mentioned would make sense. Dominique Brown fascinates me. The thing that scares me about Dominique Brown is, from what I have seen of him at Louisville and what I saw of him down here this week, he's a flat-footed runner. He does not have the high knee action. And my experience, not that there are never exceptions to the rule, but my experience is in the NFL, that's a hard style to get away with because of all the garbage that's laying around at the line of scrimmage. And literally, when you run flat-footed like that, you literally have the opportunity that the 25-yard line will trip you up and tackle you. So I'm a little leery of him in that perspective, and I'm still not sure if I can get a read for his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield, although that's not a huge thing in the Packers scheme of things. So that certainly wouldn't deter them. One of the things that does fascinate him about me on the positive side is that you look at this guy and he doesn't look super, super thick. He doesn't look heavy. He looks like he's in good physical condition. And yet on a 6'2" and a quarter inch frame, he packs 232 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't, when you look at him, I know Eddie Lacy, you know, wears a flak jacket under his uniform, and that makes him look thicker than he really is. But he doesn't look anywhere near as thick as an Eddie Lacy does. And I guess I'm going to need to see some numbers from Dominique Brown at the combine before I get too excited. But I can see where a team like the Green Bay Packers and the kind of running backs in general that Ted Thompson seems to like would have interest there. I think Malcolm Brown from Texas is a much more interesting, potentially explosive NFL runner, not a home run hitter, not going to break off very many 50, 60-yard runs, although not many people do anymore. But he has burst. He's a one-cut runner, which fits the Packers' running scheme. He's got good burst through the line of scrimmage if there's a crease or a hole there. And perhaps the biggest difference between he and Brown would be that Derek Brown, Malcolm Brown, really shows excellent hands and excellent catch and run ability on shallow passes coming out of the backfield. And I guess I could editorialize and say, you know, perhaps that is something that Ted and his staff aren't quite satisfied with the current stable that they have. And a Malcolm Brown in the right round at the right value would be of interest to them because it might add a little explosiveness to the few times that they do dump the ball out of the backfield to a running back.
Yeah, Eddie Lacy does a good job in that regard. James Starks, not so much.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And Brown is much more explosive than James Starks.
On the defensive side of the football, I think, you know, people have already identified inside linebacker as one of the Packers' biggest needs. I'm not sure how much day one and day two talent is at the Shrine game, but are there any good prospects kind of at the inside linebacker position there?
I'm glad you touched on that last statement of yours, and I won't get carried away. I won't get too long-winded on you, Brian.
Okay.
Time is of the essence, but you're absolutely correct. People have to keep in mind that the guys I've been looking at and they've been looking at all week down here, there may be two or three that might get selected in the top 100 picks the first 3 days of the draft. The rest of these guys, there's a lot of talent here. There's a lot of talent from small schools, and these guys will take up a lot of places in round 4 through 7 and undrafted.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I'm glad you brought that up. There's a guy that there's not a ton of explosive elite linebacker talent here, but there is a guy that intrigues me, and his name is Tywan Jones from Michigan State.
Yep, yep.
And Jones played outside most of his career because you had another member of the Bulla family holding down the middle linebacker spot most of the time at Michigan State. But he switched to middle linebacker for them this year. And Tywan Jones is a very athletic linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
I am not going to pretend to you that he can cover receivers coming out of the backfield or the tight end 15 or 20 yards down the field. You don't do that when you stand 6'2" and a half and weigh 258 pounds.
Yeah.
But I would say to you that I think he has better short range pass cover skills than AJ Hawk
mm-hmm.
or Clay Matthews. and he is a thumper. He really, you know, at these venues, one of the things the coaches preach all week long is stay off the ground. They don't want people getting rolled on, stepped on. Stay off the ground. When you tackle, you don't tackle full out. You make your hit on the runner or the receiver, but then you let them go and they run 20 yards downfield to show that they've got some speed. Even without lowering the boom, lowering his shoulder, and trying to lay people out, I will say unofficially, I am prepared to give the he knocked down the most people trophy to Tywan Jones this week. So what I am saying to you is, I think this guy is a big, tough son of a gun who can plug the middle and is probably stronger, more naturally strong than A.J. Hawk has been for the Packers. But he has some of the athleticism that you would expect out of a Jones.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe what I'm getting at is somewhere between Jones and Hawk, here's Tywan Jones
mm-hmm.
from Michigan State. I would certainly think the Green Bay Packers would have watched him carefully, will watch him carefully, and I would think that second-tier level Saturday draftee, if they haven't spent an early round pick on an inside linebacker because they don't think there's much there or couldn't get him, I would think Tywan Jones would be the kind of guy they'd take a look at on the third day of the draft and try to bring him along. I like the way he plays.
Certainly good of comes from a good program there. Heck of a defense at Michigan State for several years under D'Antonio and Narduzzi, who's now head coach at Pitt.
Right.
So give me...
And Brian,
yep.
Excuse me a second. Let me add this because obviously we got some numbers this week from measurements.
Okay.
So we get a little, that's one of the great things about these All-Star games that will happen next week as well. So we get a head start on the combine, but I find this, having watched the guy, I find this interesting. Some measurables that you like to see mm-hmm. in a guy his size, his hand width, his hand spread measures a full 10 inches, which is on the high side.
Yep.
And his arms, for a guy 6'2 and a half, he has 33 and a half inch long arms. That's almost acceptable at offensive tackle, Brian. you know, and along the defensive line, probably longer arms than most of the Packers defensive linemen have.
Yeah.
I find that to add some intrigue to the mix here about his overall attributes as a prospect.
Very cool. So give me two or three guys you think are the most talented there, end up going in the highest in the draft. You mentioned maybe a few, I mean, you know, there's only going to be a handful in the top 100.
Right.
Who are these guys going to be?
Well, I'm going to give you one that to me was very fascinating because he's the highest ranked guy on almost everybody's early draft boards that appeared at this game.
Okay.
And his name is Sean Hickey, offensive tackle from Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
He's 6'5 3/4, 308 pounds. His hands are 10 3/8 inches wide, and his arms are 32 3/4. A lot of people think, similar to Pugh, who came out of Syracuse, he took Pugh's place in the Syracuse line.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that the Giants drafted number one 3 years ago and has been a starter since he was drafted. Hickey is not as strong, probably not as NFL ready as Pugh was coming out. Many of us believe Sean Hickey is going to slide inside the guard, and having less than 33-inch long arms would be another indicator that he might be better off inside at guard.
Yeah.
What I thought was very interesting about Hickey, I would have said to you Monday and Tuesday of this week, somebody needed to take a big 12 and a half size shoe and stick it up his butt in practice. This kid looked like he didn't care if he was in the Shrine venue or not. Very disappointing the first few days. If there's one thing that really scares you at these venues, these all-star venues, is when you see guys that don't look like they care to be there. It makes you worry a little bit, because if they can't get fired up about a job interview, how fired up are they going to be in practices in a 16-game NFL season? I'm happy to say somebody got to him. I don't know if one of the coaches had a heart-to-heart with him or what it was. Maybe it was because Sean Hickey, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, because Syracuse was so bad. He finished his season in November.
Yeah.
So he had the entire month of December and the first week and a half of January with no football.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give him the benefit, because Wednesday and Thursday he picked up his play and looked like the guy we thought he would. My guess is, as long as he interviews well, he'll be up there. I saw a guy that really stood out, and I know it's not just me. It was anybody that I asked about him and spoke with down there. And in a way, it's too bad, because this is the kind of guy that if he doesn't get noticed in a game like this, perhaps Ted Thompson and his guys grab him in the fourth round and you start talking about being a steal. But I would say a guy who probably is now in the top 100, and I think he's going to put up excellent numbers at the combine or his pro day if he doesn't get invited. And this is the great thing about the Shrine game compared to the Senior Bowl. We know the guys at the Senior Bowl next week. I was not particularly familiar with Trey McBride, a wide receiver from the College of William and Mary.
Mm-hmm.
But Trey McBride is about 6.5 inches tall. He's a solid 205 pounds. The kid is quick. The kid is fast. His hands are not terribly big. They only measured an even 9 inches, which isn't terrible, but it's not ideal. But I didn't see this kid drop very many balls at all. He gets his hands on the balls, and he seems to break away from cornerbacks who are fighting him for that ball, and he is not afraid to go into a crowd. I like this kid a lot.
Yeah.
I could see this guy at his size, again, 6.5 and 205 pounds, with his quickness and speed, I could see him putting a lot of current Packer wide receivers back on the practice squad or being waived. I think he looked like he's got more talent, more quickness, and more potential than guys like Boykin, or maybe even, I dread to say this because I don't know how popular he is, but Aberderis. McBride's the kind of guy that the Packers, I think, would look at, but I think he looked good enough. He's moved himself into the top three rounds. And then a sleeper, and again, I'm just going to say this doesn't seem to be the kind of guy that the Packers like. I remember hearing Packers coaches, was it 2 years ago, complaining before last year's draft, or not complaining, but expressing concern that the Packers don't have much length on their defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Hrgović himself, wasn't it, who was talking about that last year at this time?
I think we talked about that.
Yeah, and then they drafted Thornton, who's another guy who's not particularly long.
Yeah.
But there was a young man here this week that I am anxious. I don't know if we may have to wait till pro days. I'm still not convinced he's going to get invited to show up at the combine. But there's a kid from University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, number 91. And I encourage Packer faithful to warm up for the championship game by watching the Shrine game Saturday. There's some good, solid talent here. And given the Packers' propensity to like to develop their own, you know they're probably going to take a couple kids from this game.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Lott is the kid's name, number 91. He plays defensive tackle. He's 6'4", 299 pounds. And I, from watching him, he looks gorgeous. I, you know, the man crush kind of thing, Brian. I'll bet you when he shows up at the combine and they parade in their underwear for their photos and the weigh-ins and such, you know, he's gonna be put on a fireman calendar somewhere or something for the ladies to look at next year. He's got quickness. He's trim and fit. I am sure in an NFL weight room, which would be better than the University of Chattanooga, I am sure that he could add another 10, 15 pounds without losing much of his quickness. He needs to learn to use his hands more aggressively and needs to be stronger in his hands and his arms. But he was beating people. He was holding the line of scrimmage. And I would think 6'4", let's say 305, 310, which is seems to be the sweet spot for the Packers when it comes to defensive linemen, I would think that Watt would be a really good defensive end when they run their three-man scheme.
Yep.
But I think his real value to the Green Bay Packers would be that when they decide to go to the Eagle and only have two defensive linemen out there, mm-hmm. he has the combination of the size, the length, and the strength to be one of those two men and actually do a little bit more than just dance with two offensive linemen for 8 seconds.
Yeah.
As you can tell, I'm really impressed with this guy. And the key now becomes, again, how many people discover him, how soon, and does it push him into the top three rounds? One more guy, because I think this would be a great fit for the Green Bay Packers, assuming that they probably can't and don't want to necessarily afford to try to bring back B.J. Raji again, on the assumption that I'm a Frenchman, so I'm going to say it as they would in the Bayou, that Guillon has impressed them enough that you know, they're not going to pay him and pay B.J. Raji. There's a kid here from Northern Iowa. So now we're talking the smaller schools that Teddy likes to unearth, named Xavier Williams. And he's defensive tackle. And remember, at these All-Star games, they have to play 4-3 defensive schemes. No 3-4 allowed, no blitzing allowed.
Okay.
He's number 98, if some of your listeners are watching the game tomorrow afternoon. Here are the weigh-in numbers on Williams. He stands exactly or an even 6 feet, 2 inches tall. He weighs 325 pounds. His hand length is 10 or spread is 10 and a quarter inches. His arm length is 33 and a half inches. And he is a load who can move his own body around, Brian. He really destroyed some offensive linemen in the one-on-one pass blocking drills. Now, that's weighted severely in favor of the defensive linemen because of the type of drill it is. But he dominated. And when they went to 11-on-11, it took two blockers to keep him from collapsing the middle of the defensive line. He too might work his way into the top 100. I would say to you, we get to round four, and assuming that probably by round four the Packers have a compensatory pick and have two picks in that round, I would, based on what I have seen in 4 days down here, and we'll see how he does in the game, I would love to see. I think this guy could at least do for them what B.J. Raji did for them when he was having his better years early in his career.
That would be nice. Let's turn our attention to the current Packers here, Paul. Thank you so much for all your insight on the Shrine game, but we do have a big game this weekend.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a team that lost to Seattle back in week one rather handily. In your opinion, do they stand a chance, these Packers, of turning the tables on Sunday?
Well, you're going to wish... You'd wish we kept the Shrine talk. I am not optimistic about Sunday's game.
Hmm.
I think the Seahawks are a tough matchup for the Packers, period, because their team speed exceeds that of the Packers, in my opinion, by quite a bit. And that causes issues. The fact that we have to go to Seattle, which is home field advantage like no other team in the league, and a house of horrors for visiting teams, also does not make me feel good. And probably worst of all, with the overall team speed and size, the combination of the size and the team speed of the Seattle defense and a hobbled Aaron Rodgers, I think it could be a really bad day for Aaron, and I think he could take quite a beating in this game. I'm not feeling good. Whatever the spread is right now, until it gets to double digit, if I were betting M&Ms, I'd have to take the Seahawks this weekend. I'm sorry.
I can see that. I'm feeling surprisingly optimistic about the Packers' chances, but the one thing I do totally agree with you about, and that this could be the key to the whole game, is Aaron Rodgers. Do you think the Seahawks, I mean, they have such a great defense. Are they able to get pressure with that front four? Do you bring extra pressure knowing that he's injured? I'm surprised the Lions and the Cowboys didn't blitz more knowing he was injured. How do you think that plays out?
Well, I agree with you that I would have expected perhaps that there would have been more stunting and blitzing than there was against Aaron. But yeah, like I said, I think unfortunately Aaron's injury plays right into the hand, the type of injury that it is, plays right into the hands of that Seattle defensive front four. And yes, indeed, they do rely most of the time on that front four to bring the pressure. But because they have so many athletes there, like the Michael Bennett's and the Irvins, and you know, literally the list is deep. They've got the depth there to rest their people. They just really are able to bring the pressure without doing a whole lot of blitzing. I think we might see a bit more blitzing than they have done, because my guess is, my assumption is, Seattle coaching staff is pretty sharp. Most of them in the NFL are, but I think Seattle's overall is a notch above, and they're going to come up with some things that Dallas didn't think or try to do against the Green Bay Packers. And I think they're going to have Aaron Rodgers on the run, but he can't. And that tells me what I fear will happen is you'll see an entire game where Rodgers looks harried and harassed like he did in the first half against the Cowboys. It's not going to let up in the second half of this game.
Yeah. Do you have before we let you go, do you have an official prediction, score prediction for us?
Oh boy, I have a bad feeling.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be something like 31-14. I really do. It, like I said, I think even on a good day, the Seahawks are a tough matchup for the Green Bay Packers. You know, Brian, mm-hmm. there's always, in any sport, there's always certain teams that no matter how well they play, or even certain teams no matter how badly they're doing, they present matchup issues for certain teams. And I think it gets downplayed too much. And that's why you see so many upsets, so to speak, NFL Sunday, because the bookmakers and the odds makers sometimes don't take a look at the matchup situations and how a certain strength on a certain team is just kryptonite to the team they're playing. And I would present that Seattle, with all the factors involved, is the Green Bay Packers' kryptonite right now. It's probably the one team I would like them not to have to play, even if Aaron Rodgers was healthy.
Yeah. Paul, I hope you're wrong. Thank you.
I do too.
Thank you for joining us on the show. Great job on your work at gbnreport.com. Do I have that website right?
That is correct, and it is a free website. It's not going to cost people anything. It's one of the longest running websites of its kind, draft oriented, football oriented. Colin Lindsay, the editor, took me into the fold this year because I got sick of fighting with my own website and the IT problems that I couldn't solve. And Colin's website is in its 17th year.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I'm proud to be part of it, just like I'm proud to be part of Cheesehead when we get to draft time.
Very cool. Well, it's good to talk to you. Are we good for next week, too?
Absolutely. We can talk at the end of the week because Friday is a down day at the Senior Bowl, and we will have had 3 days worth of accumulated eyeball watching. So be glad to get together with you next Friday again.
All right. Sounds good, Paul. Have a good weekend. Have fun at the Shrine Game, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, sir. And you're right. I hope I'm wrong about the Pack. Go Pack, go.
All right. Go Pack, go. We'll
Take
see
care,
you.
Guys.
See ya. Paul Guillemette of GBN Report, the Great Blue North Draft Report here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Friday morning. But now it's time for
Packers News of the Day.
Packers running back Eddie Lacy surprisingly shows up on the injury report on Thursday, listed as a limited participant with a knee injury. Caught people by surprise because he was not listed the previous day on Wednesday. So just kind of out of the blue this happens. Although Mike McCarthy downplayed it, saying his knee was sore and he took him out in the middle of practice on Thursday. But more because the head coach is just worried, and I'm thinking this is rather precautionary, and the Packers, with the NFC Championship and a spot in the Super Bowl on the line, simply don't want to take any chances whatsoever with one of their best players. So, I mean, could this be a situation where the Packers are downplaying an injury, having it be, you know, more serious than they're letting on? Possibly. Stranger things have happened in professional football, but the way it makes it sound, it's probably not too much to worry about. We will find out more today on Friday, the day, in fact,
the day ahead.
Our next segment, Packers release their final injury report of the week, so we get the game day status projections. You know, there's a couple, although the Packers aren't really injured right now, there's a couple Pro Bowl caliber players on the injury report: Eddie Lacy, Aaron Rodgers, Josh Sitton. It would surprise me if any of them are not listed as probable. You know, they're all going to play, very likely, but the official word will come on Friday morning. But also interesting, today on a Friday, history being made, not really, you know, nothing too notable here, but the Packers, in advance of, you know, the most important game of the season thus far, and the fact that it's way out on the West Coast in a long flight, traveling on a Friday for the first time in head coach Mike McCarthy's tenure, so traveling 2 days before a game, for the first time in Mike McCarthy's tenure. So here's Mike McCarthy speaking yesterday. This is from the Thursday press conference, basically giving the rationale. Why are they doing this? Listen in.
A number of different reasons. I mean, you know, it's a four-hour plane flight. I mean, there's a lot of components. Actually, we'll talk about it in depth tomorrow, you know, as a football team, and make sure everybody clearly understands exactly why we're doing this. I think it's an incredible commitment from the organization. You know, it's just you know, just the way we travel, the opportunity to go up there and not blink an eye. So this has given us the best chance to, you know, prepare and put us in position to win this game.
So there you go. There's the word from head coach Mike McCarthy. He has a lot to do with the long flight. I mean, that's a flight to Seattle. That's got to be the longest trip the Packers could possibly take in the entire NFL, is it not? Well, maybe towards San Diego or something. That could get rather far as well. But regardless, it's a long flight. And so that's why the Packers are doing it. You know, there's been so much made of their, you know, preparation this year in terms of reducing injuries and their practice schedule. On Saturday, they're actually finding a facility to practice out in Washington, as they actually practice heavier on Saturdays than they do on Fridays. They simply do a walkthrough today. That's about the extent of their on-field preparations, and they have a brisk, fast-paced practice on Saturdays the day before a game. It's hard to argue with the results. Injuries for the Packers much less this year. So I think they're getting their bodies to adjust a little bit more, reduce jet lag. You could argue that it's maybe a minor thing, but I suppose with the NFC Championship on the line, they're not leaving anything to chance. So that's what's up for today. Kind of one last thing here. If you were disappointed in Paul Guillemette's prediction for the game, I am feeling surprisingly optimistic, and maybe I shouldn't be. I mean, I simply, this is a Packers show for Packer fans. I can't dismiss what Paul Guillemette said. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. The Packers lost by 20 points to the Seahawks already once this year. They weren't close already once this year. So, there's reason to think that the Seahawks could very easily win this game, defending Super Bowl champions, good talented players, Russell Wilson, Marshawn Lynch, and all that, and a great defense. But I'm feeling good. Not to toot my own horn, but kind of to a little bit. Yesterday, if you haven't already seen the post here at Cheesehead TV, I wrote an article, A Dozen Reasons the Packers Are Better Equipped to Win Than in Week 1 of the Season. And, it's remarkable that I was able to come up with a dozen reasons why the Packers are better equipped to win. Go read the article, but I mean, just to briefly sum them up, Clay Matthews is now playing at inside linebacker, and how good has that been? Sam Barrington's role has expanded while A.J. Hawk and Brad Jones' roles have contracted. They're now keeping Julius Peppers fresh, reducing his role to 30-some snaps a game when it was 50-plus, early in the season. 50, 60, 70 snaps a game for Julius Peppers. The offensive line continuity since Brian Bulaga's injury. Remember, he went out that game against Seattle in week one, but since, week three onward, those five guys have played fantastic. The production they've gotten from a third, fourth, and fifth wide receivers to emerge like they did last week in the game against the Cowboys. Devontae Adams, Richard Rodgers, Andrew Corliss all catching touchdowns. The development of the rookies. I could go on here. I feel really good about a lot of the things the Packers are doing right now. And I think if there's anybody that can beat this Seahawks defense, it's Aaron Rodgers. The one thing that worries me is if they do get a pass rush on him and they start putting a couple hits on him, either forcing him to move outside the pocket and he can't, or they put a couple hits on him and, you could see a team that this is what worried me in the Lions and the Cowboys games, why they didn't blitz. Boy, he's injured. All of a sudden, you start sending 5-6 guys after Aaron Rodgers, and you put a couple, 2-3-4 hits on him. Well, how you feel now, Aaron? You're already got an injured calf. That's what worries me. But hey, like I said, I'm really gung-ho on the Packers offensive line. I was asked the other day, just yesterday, in fact, had a interview with Sportstown Chicago podcast there. They asked me, where do the Packers have the advantage in this game, the clear-cut advantage? And I kind of struggled off the cuff answering that question. I think I answered with, Aaron Rodgers being a better quarterback than Russell Wilson, all things, all things told. I think most people would agree with that, but I really think the clear cut, because Russell Wilson is a very good quarterback himself, no doubt. But I think the clear cut advantage for the Packers is comparing the Packers offensive line to the Seahawks offensive line. I think it's better. And the Packers receivers against the Seahawks receivers, who I think are better, and they got their work cut out for them because they play a very good defense against the Seahawks.
but I think that's where the Packers have the advantage. And somehow, some way, I don't know if it's going to be against Richard Sherman, how much they're going to test him. Well, they're going to test him a little. They're not going to avoid him entirely, but you still don't go after the league's best cornerback when there's, you know, weaker links on the team. So it'll be interesting. I was made a fool week one of the season. I predicted the Packers to win week one. I'm not the type that's, you know, green and gold tinted glasses who's will never pick against the Packers. I do. But week one, I'm trying to think, you know, what made me so confident then? I was proven wrong. Maybe it's just because it's week one and you don't really know, you know, what you have in a team yet. But I'm feeling oddly confident the Packers can come away with a victory. I think it'll be low scoring. But I got the Packers winning 24-21 in this game. I don't think they're going to score a ton, you know, as this the number one scoring team in the NFL, the Packers are. But they're not going to be, you know, putting up numbers at the same pace on the scoreboard as they normally do against the Seahawks defense. But I'm calling for 24-21 Packers advancing to the Super Bowl. We'll see. But there you go, folks. So hopefully we left you out on a positive note on this show. Regardless, I respect Paul Guillemette's input nonetheless. Hopefully we're having him on the show next Friday. He'll be at the Senior Bowl in Mobile. So hopefully we can make fun of him for the Packers winning the NFC Championship game then. So we'll see you later, folks. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us. On behalf of Jamie Snowden, Alex Talich, I'm Brian Kirivu. We'll see you later. Have a good weekend and enjoy the NFC Championship game. Watch it, you know, follow along right here with our live blog at Cheesehead TV during the game if you want. So we'll see you later, folks. I leave you today with a song called So Far From Home by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. Go Pack, go.